I'm Rhea Greif, and welcome to the debut of U Inc. on WCBE 90.5 FM. On today's program, we're going to be speaking with Josh Miller about the gift of giving, and he's going to tell us about where he got that dinosaur bone. And we're going to be speaking with Cheryl Harrison on Harnessing Dreams, and she is going to tell us about her recurring dream. U Inc. is about exploring the most important brand in your life, which is you. So join me, have some edutainment, and get some wellness tools to help build your brand. And now, the news. Hi, and thank you for joining us at U Inc. My name is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help you build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to lead you in a more positive, successful direction in life and in business. Some of these tools you'll find helpful today, and some you will put in your tool belt later, depending on when you need to use it. Hopefully, this week's tool you will start to use tonight while you're sleeping, actually. Today's tool is dreams, and why it's important to have the ability to harness your dreams as a part of your life, and how to utilize this gift once I've demonstrated to you that this is a great tool for your brand. Okay, let's start with what a dream actually is. Most of us who think of dreams think of Sigmund Freud's book, The Interpretation of Dreams. His work was actually so groundbreaking that it has been 116 years since it was published, and yet it is still considered an authority on the subject. But before I get into all of that, what is a dream, you might wonder? Well, the average person experiences an average of 150,000 dreams by the age of 70, and I did the math. That's about 6 dreams a night starting from birth, maybe a few less because it's theorized that dreams happen to us even before we're born. So you might go through 4 stages of sleep with different brain wave patterns. And then there's REM sleep, which is the time that we are actually paralyzed but experiencing dreams. And if you weren't, you'd actually be running around and acting them out. It's really a fascinating subject, one that most of you probably still have an inkling about from your intro to psych class books like Psychology of Your Life by Feldman. And this book and others mentioned in this program, as well as links to articles referenced, can be found on our website. There are different types of dreams, too. The one that Freud is well known for is wish fulfillment, which is unconscious wishes that you want to see filled but are threatening to your waking life. So your actual wishes, called the latent content, are embedded in the manifest content, which is the storyline of your actual dream. You know, those dreams where you're yelling at someone or fighting someone. So those are the ones that you really want to express, but it's threatening to reality. And believe it or not, most dreams are actually about aggression and tragic disappointment. And no one knows exactly why, but possibly because it is a safe place to express those feelings and concerns. But many psychologists also reject this as a lot of hocus pocus and attribute dreams to less mysterious causes. For example, dreams for survival, these are dreams where, for example, you might be avoiding zombies, is probably just because you watched The Walking Dead, but it's also an opportunity to go over your survival skills, believe it or not. This is thought to be a carryover from our ancestors, not a preparation for the zombie apocalypse. There is the activation synthesis theory, is that your brain is actually going through its system checks while you're sleeping. And while it does that, it dislodges memories. And because we have the need to maintain a plot, you actually add in things from your day to make a story come to life in your dream. So, for example, professors will dream about lecturing. Bus drivers will dream about driving the Coda bus. But what your brain uses can be a clue to your actual fears, emotions, and concerns. So net-net, common dreams can be about end of life, facing fears, anxiety preoccupations, wish fulfillment. For example, I might wish for a house full of cats in my dreams, even though I already have 5, or an array of subconscious issues you may be suppressing. If you're just joining us, you're listening to U Inc. on NPR's local station, WCBE 90.5. So now let's enter the importance of harnessing your dreams, because we see that our dreams actually hold a lot of great clues. So now that we know that dreams hold important messages for us, how do we manage to harness that and make it a tool for us? Some people might say, listen, I'm so tired. I just want to sleep. I don't want to mess with this. Actually, people who have the ability to do this, it's called lucid dreaming, actually wake up with a ton of euphoria because they have this accomplishment. And you can actually read more about this in this book called Lucid Dreaming by Morley. So how do you do it? All right, Rhea, I'm game. I'm going to try this tonight. Fantastic. So here's how you start. You lie in bed and you repeat this mantra. Tonight, I remember my dreams. Tonight, I remember my dreams. I'm going to be in charge of my dreams. Now, first off, I want to say that you should be sleeping about 7.5 to 8 hours a night, at least 80% of the time. And most of us don't do that, which is a big problem. It's one of the best things that you can do for yourself is to actually sleep all those hours. And about 100 years ago, I found out during my research, we were sleeping 3 hours more than that, which I can't even imagine sleeping 11 hours a night. Sounds divine, but I can't imagine doing it. Anyways, so if you don't sleep 7.5 to 8 hours a night, your body will then prioritize deep sleep instead. So make sure you get in that time so that you can get into that REM sleep. Okay, you're doing that. You said the mantra. You've had enough sleep. You're going to sleep. Great, you're asleep. So now here's what you do. When you fall asleep, to help develop the awareness that you're dreaming or not, the next step is to do this. A common trick among regular lucid dreamers is to actually observe your hand. So you like kind of gesture your hand in front of you and you observe it and you turn it over. So if you're dreaming, your hand will change appearance as you move it, which sounds amazingly fun. But once your brain knows that it's sleeping, so once you do that and your brain confirms, oh yeah, I'm sleeping, suddenly you can actually influence the action in your dreams. And this is where the therapy happens. This is that Ewing tool. You can eat cakes so you don't crave sugar. You can tell yourself, I'm not addicted to nicotine anymore and not smoke that cigarette. You can actually improve your physical skills. A lot of athletes do this. You can boost your immune system, particularly if you're fighting something. So these are some of the great benefits that you can utilize and harness your dreams for. Some other things that people do, you can try to pause your dreams or fast forward them or just change the course of action. I once had a college roommate at OSU that was very good at this. I couldn't believe it myself. I'm not so good at it. I really want to try and improve this skill. So I'm going to try a little bit more of this lucid dreaming that I've been researching about. And it's funny, as I was writing this last night, my 5-year-old daughter had a bad dream. And when I went to comfort her, she said, I couldn't look away, mommy. To which I responded, you don't have to look. This is your dream. You can end it whenever you want. You can turn it to anything you like. You are in charge. This is your dream. And she fell back peacefully asleep. Now, what about those of you who say you can't dream or you can't remember your dreams? Here's what you can do. So one of the things that we talked about is maybe you're not getting enough sleep. So if you're not, your body's going to catch up on the restorative sleep first. Or if you know you've had a dream but you can't remember, what you can do is keep a notepad nearby or a recording device. And as soon as you get up, start to write down what it is that you remember about your dream. So these are some of the ways that you can record your dreams so that you can access them and interpret them later. So this sounds like something that you might want to try, sounds like something I would want to try, and I would love to hear about some of your dreams so we could explore them together. So feel free to shoot me a message, email, or comment on the website about it. Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember, you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach the stars to change the world. That is a quote from Harriet Tubman.
Yeah.
You're listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE. Today's guest for Harnessing Dreams is Cheryl Harrison. Cheryl Harrison, thank you for coming. She has been a marketing, community, and managing and doing public relations in Columbus for almost 7 years now at Speech Bubble. She is also the founder and editor of the Columbus boozing blog Drink Up Columbus, as well as the contributing writer for 614 Magazine and Outlook Columbus. Cheryl has been voted one of the top three bloggers in Columbus by the readers of 614 Magazine for the past 5 years. And she's also an expert at making her own dreams a reality when she dreamt of her new business idea, okay, and she quit her job, and now she's representing companies, judging beer contests, sought-after blog for up-to-date info. She's highly in demand, and I might add, might just have the best work-life balance in the world. Cheryl, thanks for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cheryl, I know I'm going to ask you this first question that everyone wants to know. Do you dream of beer?
You know, I actually don't think I've ever had a dream about beer. I think I'm so overwhelmed by beer that that's the last thing my mind and my body wants to deal with when I'm sleeping. So no, I don't think I've ever had a beer dream.
That's interesting. I think we would have thought of that. But yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I don't know. I think I may have told you about this. I had a dream about you once when I was thinking about guests for the show. And I was late to a meeting with our underwriter and community relations director, Jim Coe. And in my dream, because I was with Edwina of Absolutely Fabulous, and she was playing the role of Cheryl Harrison, you.
Perfect casting. Right?
And her hair was gray. And I kept arguing with her, saying, why isn't your hair that signature red that Cheryl Harrison has? You're not doing the right thing. And I kept arguing with her about it. And that's what made me late. And so I just found that interesting. Because for me, it was clear. I was thinking about you. I was watching reruns of the show. I was thinking about the U Inc. tool. But I want to let everyone know who's listening to us right now, Cheryl still has her signature red hair.
Yes, I'm glad I'm not graying yet. No. I've got a birthday this week, so I'm fingers crossed I'm not graying anytime soon, though.
I was actually going to ask you about that. You have a big birthday coming in 2 days,
right? I don't know how big it is, but yeah, it's my birthday. I'll be 28, so.
Oh, congrats.
I think that's it's good.
Have you had dreams about your upcoming birthday, or do you have any like dreams of what you want your day to be like? What are your plans for your birthday, I wonder?
My plans for my birthday, there's this place in Toledo that has private swimming pools in the rooms.
I think I've heard of this.
That's where we're going this week for my birthday, because I love pools and water, and I think it's very peaceful. So.
Okay.
I'm going to just float for a day.
Good, good. That's a good dream, I think, for everyone to have. And so you mentioned to me also that you do have this recurring dream. Do you still have it?
Yeah. I've been having this dream probably since I was in high school, but definitely more frequently since I've been a business owner, I think. So my dream, and I think a lot of people have a similar version of this dream, but my dream is I am, you know, in a high school theater production, I generally am myself at my current age, and I've gone back because I did a lot of theater in high school. So I'm visiting or, you know, checking out the show, and I either forget that I was supposed to be in the show or am asked to fill in last minute in the show. So the show is happening and I do not know any of the lines, but we're going. We got to move forward. So, yeah, I have that dream a lot.
That's
I wish I didn't. Yeah, it's very stressful.
So that's just something that just keeps happening and you don't remember your lines. Do you just wake up? Like, how do you handle it? Have you thought about, like, read about harnessing dreams? Like, how do you handle that?
So when I think I haven't really thought of it as lucid dreaming or harnessing it, but sometimes I'm able to solve the problem and sometimes I'm not. So sometimes I just go on stage and, you know, try to improv and it goes poorly. Sometimes I get a script off stage and I just very quickly memorize my lines for a scene at a time. So I just go each scene by scene and I'm sometimes able to successfully, you know, figure out scene one, and then I run back off stage and read scene two, and then I go back and do scene two on stage. So sometimes I'm able to actually figure out the lines, but I think most times I fail pretty hard.
Okay. That's interesting. You know, there's a dream dictionary book, and again, you can find this book on our website. And it kind of talks about some of these common themes that they have in dreams. So school, when you're dreaming about school and the type of environment, it's about the relationships that you built at school, but more about any group preferences you may have had or relationships to authority. So, you know, this could be about thinking about some relationships that you're having now in relation to authority or groups that you're involved with at the moment.
Okay.
And gymnasiums, like where the auditorium or gymnasiums,
sure,
large places.
Yeah, I went to a high school that didn't have an arts department, so we had a gymnasium. We never had a theater, so
right.
It's always in the gym floor with the team name on the ground.
Which is what I figured. And what the gymnasium about, it's about taking risks and learning something new. So this is kind of one part of it. And also, you know, maybe forgetting your lines could even be about, you know, feeling like you're naked, even though you're not actually physically naked. It could be about, you know, dropping a facade or revealing a nature. So these are some of the fun things that you can take a look at a dream dictionary. But for me, I think, and for a lot of people, when we want to take a look at some of those other deeper meanings, and we talked about the synthesis activation theory. So things are getting dislodged. This is a recurring dream. So it's probably also dealing with some anxieties that you're having. What do you think the interpretation is, even like thinking about some of this fun stuff? What's your interpretation of your dream?
So I've always kind of taken it as a dream about feeling prepared for situations I'm about to face. So I think a lot of people have a similar version of this dream where they have a test that they didn't study for.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I think it's a theater dream because that was something that was really important to me in my life. But yeah, I think it's, you know, I'm either stressed about a meeting or a presentation or a radio interview, you know, something that I have coming up that I'm wondering if I am prepared enough for. It seems mm-hmm. to be when I tend to have that dream the most.
Okay.
I've also found that if I take an anxiety pill before bed, I don't have that dream. I still dream, but I don't dream that dream.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of reaffirms for me that it's me being a little bit overly anxious about something, or maybe appropriately anxious.
Right.
But,
so does this dream, so, you know, you're in there, you're starting to make some of those changes in your dream, which is great. Does that then translate into when you wake up and you think to yourself, I'm anxious about something? It could mean that, you know, it could be something about, you know, what my true nature is, or maybe I'm doing something new, this is risky. Then does this translate for you into taking some action statements in your life, in your waking life?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned I tend to associate this with times when I'm not feeling prepared,
mm-hmm.
and I am an over-preparer.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wake up with this anxious feeling that I'm not prepared for something, and I usually pretty readily can identify which thing that is, I will go make lists. I'll start mm-hmm. making my checklists and making sure that every detail is accounted for,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, I am as prepared as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, things go awry unpredictably,
mm-hmm.
but I did have this dream recently. I had a big 24-hour board game marathon
mm-hmm.
fundraiser, and so
I saw that
being
was great.
Stuck in a place for 24 hours mm-hmm. with a couple hundred people expected to show up, there's just a lot of things I needed to make sure happened before they got there. So my original checklist of 15 things the morning of turned into a checklist of like 100,
mm-hmm.
but they all got done and everything and went off without a hitch. And when I actually got there, I was not anxious at all because I knew I had everything I needed with me and everybody I needed in place to help me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great event.
That's great. Yeah, I did read about it. It sounds amazing. And I love that you're kind of leveraging your persona and your popularity, and the people who are following you are leveraging it towards good also. But also good for yourself that, you know, you realize that this is what it's about and you're creating those checklists and you're developing that confidence. Do you see yourself ever not having this dream in the future?
No, I mean, I just, like I said, I'm a planning type of person. I've always been a little bit overly anxious of a person. That's something I'm working on both
mm-hmm.
myself and medically.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always gonna want to overthink things because I'm a perfectionist and I want everything to go perfectly.
Right.
So I try to tame that enough that it doesn't interfere with my life negatively. But I think it's very important to worry sometimes about things
mm-hmm.
because otherwise there's a lot of room for error.
Right.
And I would rather worry a little bit and have everything go the way I want it to.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're using it in a positive way. One of the things that you mentioned, too, is medication. So talking about medicating with your one of your job hazards is the fact that you drink beer for a living.
Right.
If you can call it a hazard, you know, some people might say this is a dream job, myself included. So one of the things that I did take a look at was so what happens when you drink alcohol? It kind of delays a little bit the time you get into REM sleep.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you'll have it a little bit later and closer to your waking and more intense. So it kind of doubles back and it makes your REM more intense. So when you wake up, your dreams are a little bit more vivid.
That explains so much. You have no idea how much that explains. Okay, good. Because there'll be, you know, 3 or 4 nights a week where I've been out drinking at something. And then those are the nights. I had one of those this morning. I was at a brewery event last night and I had a very intense, very personal dream that I would rather not discuss, but it was very upsetting for the first 20 or so minutes that I was awake, which wasn't helped by the fact that I was unexpectedly awoken by a knock at the door. So I didn't have a chance to fully adjust to strangers in my house who were working on some renovations, which is just not a good way for anyone to start the day. But yeah, it was a very intense dream. So that I can maybe trace that back to the nights I drink. So. Good to know.
Good. And you were talking about your bedroom. So we spend about a third of our lives sleeping. What does your bedroom look like?
Well, right now it looks like a disaster zone because that's where the renovations are happening. So right now it's covered in plastic on the floor. It smells like paint and sand dust everywhere. So I'm looking forward to having my peaceful bedroom back. But
and going to the hotel in Toledo.
Yes. No, this is a perfect week to get out. They sandblasted the walls yesterday and everything is just filthy and now they're painting so everything stinks. But it's going to be beautiful. It's all kind of gray and very neutral and calming and soft, and I have a closet I can put my clothes in now, which was what the renovation was mainly for. So I'm very excited because you said you wish you could sleep 11 hours. I do a lot. I love sleep. I also have sleep apnea. I don't know why I'm listing all my medical conditions today, but so I don't necessarily get as restful of sleep. Mm-hmm. I have things I'm supposed to do for that I don't. Mm-hmm. But to make up for that, I do typically sleep at least 9 hours a night, sometimes 10, maybe 11 on a good day. But very rarely have I ever slept less than 8 hours or I certainly wouldn't be here right now. I would be taking a nap somewhere. So sleep has always been something that I've both struggled with and deeply loved.
See, now we have yet another thing to admire about you because you have your job that you have. You sleep all those hours. We admire you for yet another thing. Another thing that that we kind of talked about before we started, we were talking about when you first started this. And there were, 5 breweries when you started?
Yeah, so I set up Drink Up Columbus in 2011. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
So there were 5 breweries in Columbus at that time, and they had been around for over a decade, and they made great beer, but they weren't necessarily doing a lot in the community. They weren't on tap at other bars, for example. They weren't really coming out with as many new styles of beer. So they weren't as well known, and they weren't as interesting and unique as some of the stuff we have going on with craft beer now, where we have almost 35 breweries in Columbus. So we've grown a little bit in those 5 years.
That's excellent. And where could people go to find out this information?
Sure. Drinkupcolumbus.com. We try to keep up very actively with the local beer, wine, and spirits scene, as well as new bars, events. We also do some stuff with beers that are coming into the market. Mm-hmm. But it's very hyper-local, so if you're someone who likes to support local and you're listening to your local NPR station, so you probably are that type of person, definitely check out Drink Up Columbus and we'll give you some good places to go drink. And if you haven't, pick up a copy of the Columbus Ale Trail, which is a project I helped co-found 2 years ago. You can pick up a free copy of the book at any local brewery. You get free stuff for visiting breweries and getting stamps. So it's a really fun guide to breweries in Columbus. And it's a nice little souvenir to show off people where you visited.
Nice. So you did mention this too, that you're a musical theater lover. So tell us one that you saw recently that you really enjoyed, or maybe one that you're looking forward to seeing maybe for your birthday.
Have you seen the trailer for the Beauty and the Beast live action? That was the musical I was in high school that was my favorite. Who do you think I was in Beauty and the Beast?
The Beauty, of course.
No. Oh, thank you. But no. I was Lumiere. I was the French candle.
Nice.
I was a ladies' man. So it was just such a fun role. Mm-hmm. And my two of my best friends then, one of them was Cogsworth, so, you know, my kind of sidekick in it. He's now a Broadway actor. Our Beast is now a Broadway actor. Mm. I had no illusions that this was something that I had talent in, but I'm so excited that two of my best friends have made a career of it. I've always been a big fan of the arts. I mean, I was in band and jazz band and choir and theater and music theory, and I was not good at any of those things, but I just thought it was important and fun, and I valued it greatly. So it always makes me very sad when arts departments are getting cut, as the one at my high school so often is, as they build another million-dollar football stadium.
Right.
So it breaks my heart. But
yeah. So if you're just joining us, you are listening to UInc on WCBE. This is 90.5, and we are here with Cheryl Harrison. So, Cheryl, what are some of the new things that you have going on with Speech Bubble or with Drink Up Columbus that we should know, besides that Ale Trail, which was amazing?
Yeah, the Ale Trail, we'll have Volume 3 of that hopefully coming out in May, but definitely still time to do Volume 2. You get this really cool deck of playing cards when you finish it that features each brewery on a card. So it's just a really unique thing you can't just go get anywhere. I'm really proud of that.
You're always judging contests. You're always involved with festivals. Any of those coming up?
Yeah, well, we're actually working. We have filming tomorrow on a documentary series. When I say we, I mean we are publishing it on Drink Up Columbus. I'm deferring to some much more talented people than me to produce it, but We're going to start filming this week this really cool 10-part documentary series about Columbus breweries. So they're going to be half-hour episodes. It's going to be really great. The guys who are working on it have done some really good stuff. So keep an eye out for that. I'm very excited about that.
Okay. Well, Cheryl, thanks for joining us here today, and have a happy birthday floating around.
Thank you so much. I'll try to dream lucidly while while I'm floating on the water.
Very good. Thank you so much, Cheryl.
Thank you, Riz.
And now from our person on the street, tell us, Miss Lisa, what are your thoughts on harnessing dreams?
My dreams are weird.
What kind of dreams do you have? You said animals?
A lot of them are scary, and like a lot of times animals will just attack and bite people.
Check, coming in.
I think it's a lot of anxiety I have. Mm.
And your daughter?
Yeah, she has, like, really scary ones. Like, people are following her and attacking her, and, like, people are dying. She's only 20. Mm. She shouldn't be having those.
What do you guys do about it?
We talk about it and we laugh. Like, I told her, I thought I had weird dreams, but you have the weirdest dreams.
Does it make you hesitant at night when you go to sleep?
No, I don't think about dreaming before I go to bed.
Okay.
But sometimes I go back to sleep because I want to dream more, which is weird.
Even though they're that weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
I don't know. You put me on the spot, so. And I just started drinking, so no.
Okay. Thank you for your time.
Stay tuned. UInc continues in just a moment. Hi, thank you for joining us at UInc. My name is Ria Greif, and I'm here with you today, as I am every week, to help you build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, of course, we talk about using tools, and the same goes for building your brand. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some maybe you'll just put in your belt and maybe on the shelf for later. Today's tool is giving, and why it is important to have giving as part of your life and in business, and how to accept this gift once I've demonstrated to you that this is a great tool for your brand. So, first of all, let's try and understand, why should I give, right? I barely have any time. I barely have anything going on in my life. Why should I give? Well, regardless of what you give, including money, giving is a gift actually to you because it gives you meaning in life. And let's talk about that gift meaning. The power of giving comes from a selfless act, of course, where you give from the heart, and it's not tied to any special event or holiday or celebration. It's just a time where you just give something because you truly care. There should be no other motive behind it. But even though you don't expect anything in return, there really is nothing that is altruistic in life. Most things are a composition of an altruistic intention and some type of personal gain, an alloy, if you will. So when you give, you can expect to get in return a meaning, a purpose in your life. And why is this important? So meaning is something different than happiness. In fact, positive emotionality was negatively related to optimism, and optimism is the hallmark of emotional intelligence, and positively related to emotion suppression, a follow-up of studies that they've done with people. So you need to understand that research shows that if you don't have meaning in your life and you just have happiness, that there are actually dire and negative consequences. So a great article that came out this year in the Scientific American is research that shows that happiness can actually stunt personal growth and increase loneliness and decrease your sense of well-being. And a lot of people think to themselves, wow, that's something I never thought about before, which is why it's important to have meaning in your life. And giving is one way that you can achieve this sense of meaning, this sense of purpose, this sense of belonging. So the sweet spot in life is to actually have a balance of happiness and meaning. So that's one of the greatest gifts of giving. So now I'm going to assume that you are convinced we want to give. So what do? I don't have any money. So how can I give to people? The most common misconception about giving is that you have to give money. You don't have to do that. You don't have to give money. You can give kindness. You can volunteer your time. You can help a stranger. And one thing that you can do today is you can give feedback. I wrote an article about the gift of giving feedback and also the art of receiving feedback. And you can find these links and the books that we mentioned here today, both on the website here at WCBE 90.5 and also on City Scene and Healthy New Albany magazine websites, as well as the full podcasts. If you're just joining us, by the way, you're listening to You Inc. on 90.5 WCBE. This is Rhea Greif, and we are talking about the gift of giving. What you want to do then is think about different ways that you can give. So one of the ways that we talked about is the art of giving feedback and receiving feedback. So people do want, in general, know how they're doing. When was the last time that you gave feedback to a coworker, positive or negative? A person in your home, when was the last time that you gave that type of feedback? When you give people feedback at work, it elevates morale. People who have high morale are also more productive, have higher motivation, and tend to build strong working relationships. Another reason to give feedback is because people want to know if they're doing well so that they can take corrective action. How many times have I given a seminar and professionals have told me that they've received negative evaluations and they felt betrayed because they were given a bad progress report as opposed to proactive feedback? Of course, we always feel that there's a barrier to giving feedback. We're afraid we're going to hurt someone's feelings. But in most of the webinar surveys I've done, people welcome feedback. And I think most of us can agree it is something that we'd like to have. So one way you can give in the workplace is to immediately give some positive feedback to a coworker or even let them know things that they might need some improvement on. But at home, giving feedback to our loved ones is also critical. When was the last time you gave your partner, your child, some feedback? feedback about how they're doing. There are lots of books about the significance that feedback has in relationships, like On Fire and Turn Your Mate Into Your Soulmate. Again, these links are available on our website. These books regularly mention the importance of giving and being able to receive feedback and how easily we forget its value. So that's one thing that we can do in terms of giving. We can give feedback, we can receive feedback. Here's another thing that you can do. You can simply volunteer. My family is big on giving our time because we can feel the immediacy of its effects. It allows my children also to be a service to the community and become contributing citizens when they grow up. We personally enjoy volunteering for our civic association, and we've created a public edibles initiative in our neighborhood city park. The kids might gripe and moan part of the time that we have to weed and dig and water, but when we harvest with our neighbors and passerby share in the harvest, the joy and the sense of meaning are immeasurable. So think about how that would feel. You can volunteer at festivals and have fun at the same time. You can volunteer at athletic events, maybe get in shape while you do it. Help raise money for medical issues that way. You can volunteer at your local PTA. You can volunteer at a local shelter for animals or humans, foster kittens like we did. Businesses can adopt a charity. The possibilities are endless. The idea is to adopt the spirit of giving both in your life and at work. Even such small acts such as using a reusable bag and getting a wooden nickel to donate to charity, shovel your neighbor's walk while you are out there and doing yours, are small gestures that can bring a sense of meaning to you and your family that you can do today. So one thing that I want us to think about is, what is one of the things that we can do? Another way to give is actually to get rid of your stuff. We have so many things that are simply cluttering our lives. In the book, The Joy of Less by Francine Jay, she says, when our homes are overflowing with clutter, our souls take a back seat to our stuff. You can read more about how you can streamline your home for a minimalist mindset. But the great thing is, you can give your things away to those in need. You can even sell it, make some money, take a vacation, because by the way, experiences are the things that bring us true joy, not things, as evidenced by research. You can join a free cycling page on Facebook. There are endless amounts of wonderful experiences that you can have with this, and all within your reach, literally and figuratively. Do your bit of good where you are. It's those little bits of good that put together that overwhelm the world. Desmond Tutu. Okay, if you're just joining us, you're listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCB. This is Rhea Grafe. Now, today's guest may not be known as much for who he is. This is Josh Miller. He works at Skillsoft, but he is well known for what he has done and is doing. Josh Miller specializes in mobilizing the workforce of a company through best practices, inspiring growth through a holistic approach. But what sets Josh Miller apart in terms of having the gift of giving is that Josh single-handedly is responsible for creating what now is a tradition of giving for underprivileged children to be able to attend field trips. Josh is on the board of the trustees of the German Village Society, board member of the Columbus Film Council, and was on the committee for the Columbus Arts Festival. Welcome, Josh Miller, and thank you for coming today and to share your no doubt uplifting experiences. So, Josh, when we met, you told me about this wonderful thing that you did with your Airbnb home. Can you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Sure. I have a guest room at my house that I rent out through Airbnb. It's right in the middle of German Village. And because of that, you know, I have some bandwidth, but I'm also somewhat involved with the neighborhood and the German Village Society. It wasn't long ago that there was a conversation from our historic preservation advocate about one of the tour groups that was not going to be able to come to the neighborhood, group of third graders, because there just wasn't the funds available to make that happen. That really was a heartbreaking thing to hear, to think about, you know, $7 a student and they're not, prevents them from experiencing something right outside of their door.
$7. Wow.
Yes. $7 a student. I understand, I've lived in, you know, urban Columbus and volunteered and been active in quite a few different things. And I think sometimes there are blinders on as to, you know, poverty's everywhere.
Right.
And again, for $7, I mean, I would be more worried about, you know, paying for lunches if I was a parent versus a $7 field trip. But the thought that they would be, you know, denied that experience simply because of that $7, that just kind of broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, it wasn't a huge contribution, but I, you know, I used some of my Airbnb proceeds, you know, from a night and a half of somebody staying in my house, and donated that money to make their field trip possible.
Wow.
And those students, they were, it was a third grade class from the Columbus Gifted Academy located on Beck Street. So really very close to, within the neighborhood proper. So I thought that was even more of a reason to try to do something good. You know, the students are in the neighborhood every day, but yet may not understand why or the house is brick or, you know,
right,
the history behind things. And that experience, I think, could potentially be very powerful. Even, you know, if one student now takes an interest in, say, architecture or historic preservation or history, that's just such an amazing gift to be able to give.
Right. And just the ability to be able to be around it and see it every day makes it much more impactful to have the ability to go around and really learn about it. Absolutely. So I understand you then had a surprise from the school.
Yes, I was called over. I live pretty close to the German Village Meeting House where the offices are for the staff there. And they had a pile of thank you notes waiting for me from the kids. That on, you know, on one side they wrote a note of you know, dear Mr. Josh, thank you for helping with the field trip. But then on the other side they drew pictures of what they learned. It just was amazing, the things that seemed to resonate, like the, you know, the limestone and the fossils you can see in the limestone foundations, or the story of the two brothers' house that they each built a side, and they were in a fight when they went off to the Civil War, and they built it in two completely different styles, or the carriage steps that line the streets, what those are used for.
Mm-hmm.
So it was amazing, the feedback from the kids about, you know, what interesting detail or what big idea was discovered.
I see you brought a lot of them with you. They really took a lot of time, draw a lot of great pictures.
They did. And then on the other side, they learned, you know, that the German immigrants that arrived here and built those houses, I mean, they were, for the most part, very poor. They learned how they made do and built things by hand,
mm-hmm,
and were innovative. And I thought it was a great way to show kind of the full picture of things.
And also get inspired themselves that they can accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right? Any one of those stand out to you in particular?
They go across the board, but keeping in mind these are third graders,
mm-hmm,
but several of the kids mentioned, you know, I really enjoyed learning about the community my school is in.
Nice.
And I've got goosebumps right now.
Mm.
It just was, you know, it was an unnecessary step. I was happy to do that, but then to get that back, it's priceless.
So that is the gift of giving right there.
It is.
Can you tell me, I understand that you have an update.
Yes, because of the success of that and, you know, recognizing the need and that it could be filled, the German Village Society was able to secure a grant from the Tom Daley Foundation to fund those field trips for third and fourth graders throughout Columbus City Schools, you know, when there's a need, when there's an interest. So making that possible and not having, you know, to rely, it was great that German Village, that it was mentioned that there was a need to begin with, because, you know, if I wouldn't have known, I wouldn't have known to donate. But then to have that then backed up and made something that'll continue, I think is invaluable.
That's amazing. Tell me, where do you find the inspiration to, you know, be brazen enough to take these types of initiatives? How did that come about in you? How did that characteristic come about in you?
I think it's some of that as a result of just experience, whether that is maybe growing up in the suburbs, but then, you know, later in life living downtown and seeing every aspect of life, very wealthy or donating to do things for the less fortunate. You know, I think that's one of the really amazing things about Columbus, is that there seems to be, you know, a charity that's willing to help and contribute for just about any cause, and that's inspiring in its own right. And we've got, I would like to think, a mobilized community. If something is needed, and some group or some individual or individuals will step up and make that possible.
I agree. And it's like you said, like, you derived the inspiration, but now you're the inspiration to others, which is why you're here today. Thank you. So, yeah, I've been to your home. It's gorgeous, and it's full of a ton of beautiful art. Is this, you being a patron of the arts, is this one way of your giving back, because people are just creating all this beautiful art in our city?
I hadn't thought about it in that light, because I enjoy collecting, but I do try to always hit the CCAD quarterly student art sale and, you know, find a thing here and there. So I hope in that small way that helps. But I think if you can find a way to couple something that you enjoy doing with something that also, you know, can benefit others, I just think that is an amazing experience, and it doesn't necessarily feel like it's a sacrifice at that point. And I think that might be a common mistake. People think that you're sacrificing something to give something, and that doesn't have to be the case.
Absolutely. So I read this quote about you. Josh brings an exuberance to any group. He bends over backwards to help anyone in need and shows a level of commitment to his work that is rare. He's the kind of guy that almost always has an answer for you. When he doesn't, he helps you find it. His personality is engaging, and his attention to detail is impressive. So do you think that when we talked earlier in the program that, you know, you get meaning and true joy from giving, do you think that your charitable actions kind of lead you to being this exuberant person?
I think they are synonymous. I don't know if it's a chicken and the egg scenario, but I believe they work in tandem.
Okay, so this is a great example of by being this person and embodying this giving spirit kind of creates this joy and this exuberance in your own personal life. Josh, tell us about your dinosaur bone.
So I through a great series of events, a sequence of events, I have a Hadrosaurus tibia in my kitchen that I inherited through my old company. And the neat thing is when our Columbus Zoo had their Dinosaur Island exhibit come through, I reached out to them and asked if they'd be interested in featuring that or, you know, incorporating that somehow within the exhibit, but with the condition that it would be accessible to the kids. I thought it was always frustrating either when I was younger or my cousins or siblings when you would go to a museum and, you know, the velvet rope would keep you 20 feet back. And the zoo was fantastic. They built a pedestal and a container that allowed the kids to go up and, you know, knock on the bone or, you know, they'd be able to touch a real dinosaur bone. Mm-hmm. And I know that as a kid, that would have been really cool to me. So I thought that was a neat way just to, you know, to do something. And it wasn't, again, any sacrifice to do that. And, you know, hopefully some kids were inspired by it.
I would say so. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to U Inc. on 90.5 CB. This is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with Josh Miller. Josh, let me ask you a question. Is it ever okay to be selfish?
I think so. I know, and not to make that sound negative, but you have to have some me time, some recharge time. I think at one point I felt like I was overly active in donating time and to different events and groups, and felt like I was almost in, I don't know, charitable burnout, mm-hmm. for lack of a better word.
Compassion fatigue.
So there was an old friend and his wife had started a charity that helped mothers and children in Ethiopia. So my reboot was to go over there for a couple weeks and volunteer as part of a medical mission, for which I had no medical training. But by the end, I think I was basically a triage nurse or MRS. But really just that experience and being able to help out, and that really did reboot things. But it is important to keep that compartment, that recharge section of life, so you are able to, you know, not feel like you're being selfish or you're overextended or you're sacrificing, because then that's when things they kind of lose that fun, enjoyable aspect that they should always have.
Right. And you bring up a good point. Like, there's a fine line between, you know, giving, but also knowing that there are times you have to give to yourself, and that's a gift to self as well. But then we talk about the dangers of giving too much. And I think sometimes also, and someone had brought this up to me about the ugly side of giving. Like, sometimes people give because they're trying to make themselves feel better, or they're trying to overcome some level of guilt. I work with the homeless for 5 years, and I remember very, very distinctly panhandlers telling me that the holidays were their top, you know, income earning time, because people were giving them money either because they felt bad, or they weren't with anyone, or they were lonely, or they had to fill that void. How do we know when we're doing it right?
Ooh, boy, that's a tough question. Hopefully it's some, you know, mutual benefit of helping. It, you know, makes yourself feel good. It makes whatever you're doing, that benefactor, it improves their life in somehow or their situation.
So we're doing it in a way where we can actually see that we're being impactful, as opposed to I'm just doing it because I want to feel good about it.
And so going in with the field trip, I never expected to see these thank you notes. You know, what an amazing thing and effort that the kids put forth. It did make me feel good inside. there wasn't really a motivator in terms of trying, you know, guilt about having versus not having, or but it just felt like the right thing to do.
Okay. So some of the suggestions that we gave earlier in giving, was there something that you heard about that you haven't tried yet that you want to try? I mean, you just talked about traveling to Ethiopia. Certainly, that's something new and great. Is there anything else that you haven't done that you'd like to try?
I think, like to maybe do some work maybe in rural America or Ohio, or even parts of Franklin County could qualify as that. But I think there are groups of people that, you know, they may need labor or, you know, some sort of resources that I can provide, that maybe they're not served by some umbrella organization, or maybe they're struggling, but they have no connection to some outlet. But otherwise, I mean, everything that I've done in the past, I would be, you know, always willing to revisit given the opportunity.
Great. So Josh Miller has mastered the skill of the gift of giving, has become a triage nurse, and as an archaeologist all in one. Thank you so much, Josh, for coming today. I really appreciate you sharing your stories and sharing the stories of these third graders. That was very inspiring.
Thank you.
And now, a word from our person on the street.
So tell me, Sweet Lou, what are your thoughts on the gift of giving?
The gift that keeps on giving. There's one thing that I can think of that is a better gift than anything, and definitely keeps on giving well after the initial gift, and that's a hug. Think about it. One size fits all, and even if it's returned, very nice. And when you think about it, it increases oxytocin levels in the bloodstream, which increases, you know, sex drive, better attitude, better awareness, more energy, all around good thing.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Rhea Greif, and you've been listening to U Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.